Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. As does our guest, Gabrielle Hartley, second week in a row. Good morning, Gabrielle.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Oh, it was so delightful the first time around. We had to, plus we have a lot of territory to cover, don't we, with your book, Better Apart. So, okay, little background for the audience, though. Gabrielle is a former child of divorce and actually didn't have the worst experience known to mankind because your parents did try and work together best they could, correct?
That's right, Judy.
Yeah, and that makes such a big difference. And then Gabrielle went into family law, became a litigator, but also had a very cherished position with a judge and became the closer, that person who attempted to make settlements before the trial or hearing even began. And Gabrielle, that was your lead in for mediation, was it not?
It was.
Yeah. And
yeah,
so go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I really enjoyed helping people find out of the weeds that are getting twisted and turned and churned by the system.
I think we have a really tough connection.
Oh, no.
Let's power through this the best we can. People in the era Zoom are very forgiving about tough connections. So we'll get through this.
Okay.
Yeah, because
hopefully it'll get better.
Yeah. And it does generally. Yes. The gods of podcasting always look out for us. I'm fine.
Oh, God.
So yes, and there are gods of podcasting. So now you're a very successful mediator, but now we come to your book, which I loved reading. Thank you for writing it. But let's start with the title. I love the title, Better Apart. Where did it come from and how does it support the content and purpose of the book?
So, you know, Better Apart is really, really speaks of what the goal is, really, when any gets separated, even if they're not the ones who decided that they wanted to separate. Really, we don't want to stay with someone who doesn't want to be with us. And we don't want to be with someone who doesn't feel right to be with. So becoming better, enjoying our life more, being a better co-parent, being a better single person, that's really where it came from. It was just the idea of something positive, which I would title the radically positive way to separate. All too often, especially when I was growing up, it was the era of Kramer versus Kramer, where, you know, it's all about the fight, all about the lawyers and the judges. And I wanted to create a path forward, almost like a companion, whether you're in mediation or you're in litigation. And maybe you can't afford, maybe you have a document preparer because you can't really afford to have a lawyer, right? And I wanted to give you the option of, to move forward with grace and ease, and Better Apart basically provides a container to let you do a way to help the person going through the divorce have more agency in their life.
Completely understand, and I think it even adds more emphasis and importance because you come from the legal field. You don't come strictly from the position of you experienced a divorce, therefore you went into coaching and mediation and authorship. You actually worked in the court system. And I think that adds a lot of credibility.
So one of the reasons I really wanted to write the book was because I felt like there were a lot of divorce lawyers writing, like, you know, the things you have to know to divorce strategy in court. And then there's a lot of coaches who are like, here's a way to heal your heart. And I really wanted to bring together the idea of practical legal advice with mindfulness. And so we integrated yoga and meditations. Elena Brower, who is a very well-known and highly regarded yoga and meditation practitioner, she adds in beautiful stories and meditations throughout the book. And from the book, I have created something called the Better Apart Method, wherein I actually train new trained family mediators or divorce attorneys who've always been fighting on how to do it in a better way. And in that training, they learn all of the fundamentals as a group. And then they have one-to-one coaching sessions with me where I help them recreate their practice so that people move through better. So back to, I think, your original question, which was like, what is this method?
Well, where did the title of the book come from, and how does it support the content?
Oh, okay.
And let me just say one thing that I thought was completely cool about the title, and that was, it sounds like it gives permission to people to divorce, because there's a lot of guilt tied up in divorce, right? And that's how I saw it, as a very freeing.
I'm so happy. This is what I said. This is why I said I wanted to come back. You're making the exact right comments. Like, you really, so I thought, as a divorce lawyer with, at the time, you know, 20 plus years of experience working in court, working in private practice, I wanted to give you permission that you don't need to go down this ugly path. And even if you find yourself unwittingly dragged through the ugly path, you have a way to keep your life as beautiful as possible under the circumstances that you're presented with.
This is probably about the toughest thing anybody could engage in. I remember my divorce, which was as simple as a divorce could be. Nothing to argue about, and we didn't hate one another. But it was the saddest year of my life. I think when I'm working with my own clients, it's very easy for me to go back to that emotional year. And then I try and look at the methods that people like you are presenting, which are wonderful. And I think, oh God, how do you get, Gabrielle, from enormous sadness to the method? And we're going to talk about your method in a second, but how do you make that transition out of that sadness?
So the first thing you need to do is feel your sadness, right? Like, you have to grieve. There's really no way around it other than going through it, while always making space and always having been knowing that you will get through it. It is not going to define the rest of your life. It can if you don't do the work, but it needn't define the rest of your life. And so for me, when I'm going through something hard or bad, I'm really, really dedicated to making lists and to journaling. As if you read Better Apart, you know, I'm like a little, I've always been doing it since I'm a young kid. You know, I have a list from when I was 8 years old. It said like Christmas, presents, fun, you know, tree. Like, very simplistic. Make a list of how you want to feel. You don't feel like this now, so own that, have a cry, and then get out a piece of paper, buy yourself a beautiful journal and a pen, get a beautiful pad, because it feels good. It can feel decadent to write in something beautiful, right? Like, maybe you don't have a lot of money, but you can spend $30 maybe on your journal, your gratitude journal. You're going to write about your gratitude. What are you grateful for? You're grateful that you have you. You're grateful that, you know, maybe your mom loved you, or your kid loves you, or maybe you don't feel like you're surrounded by a lot of love, but you're good at cooking, or, you know, you start with something small. I say cooking because that's something, you know, maybe you're good at fishing. Maybe you run and you have very strong legs. Talk, because when you focus on what you're grateful for and what you from yourself, and it could be something really small. When you're feeling depressed, it might feel like, oh, you know, the best decision I ever did was buy that Honda, and somebody smashed into it, and so now I've made no good decisions, right? Like, you can be living in that space.
That's really funny. Yes. So okay. So now we're in a challenging space. And you have a 5-step plan, and you call it the 5 key states of being. And those 5 states are, we're going to break everyone down. Those five states are patience, respect, clarity, peace, and forgiveness. Could you start with patience? First of all, are they in the order in which they logically evolve?
So for me, but you may be different, right? Like we all have different points that we struggle with. And that better part was purposefully crafted in such a way that you could just open up to any section. You need to read the beginning, which tells you about making your list and about the practices. But then in those five elements, if you're really forgiving, you might not need to spend too long in that section. If you're really patient, you may not need to spend too long there. Maybe you're normally patient. You're not feeling patient now. You know, so patience, let's just start there, is about learning to respond rather than react, figuring out how to step back so that you can move forward. So like, for instance, there's a couple of ways you can do that. You may plan how you're going to respond to your ex when you see them, right? Like plan a bunch of things that you can say to them that are neutral, not inflammatory, closed-ended, and then you can exit the conversation. You may decide that maybe you're someone who gets overwhelmed throughout the day, nothing is happening, but you're just feeling so much emotion welling up. I know we're not on video, so you can't see me, but I'm showing, you know, a sense of excitedness. Maybe you just need to create a positive mantra that says, like, I am radiantly calm. And you just close your eyes and you tell yourself, I am radiantly calm, five times slowly. That's it. You do that five times a day. And then when you're feeling upset, you just say to yourself, what's my mantra? Oh yeah, I'm radiantly calm. I'm not feeling too calm, but guess what? That 1 second you just gave yourself to say that mantra is going to help you slow down and be more patient.
Okay, so let's put this in another real life context in the flow of divorce filing. Those darn disclosure forms. You've got to have something similar to disclosure forms, right, in Massachusetts and New York?
We do. And in New York, you know, they're not required to be filed, believe it or not. You're talking about the financial disclosure?
And the asset and debts.
Yeah. So in New York, they're done. They're part of it. Lawyers make their clients do it, typically. I would always. But that's not required. But to your point, you can feel incredibly overwhelmed and very impatient about getting those forms done, right?
But my point was going to be, you're actually great, spouse number one, at doing your required forms. You can't make a settlement unless you have a full disclosure of what you have and what you make and what you owe. You can't really do a settlement. Okay, so you're real good about doing your half, but your spouse is not so good. Is this where patience comes in?
I mean, absolutely. And other things come in here too, like query, would it help me to help them, right? Like if I jump to respect for a second, respect is about how to elevate your self-respect. Maybe you're always doing things for your ex and you're like, I'm not helping him with it. I've done everything and I'm drawing the line here. Maybe this is not the place to draw the line because you want your divorce. And if you don't help him, this paperwork is never going to get done. So maybe you need to just help him with the gosh darn document, and then you can draw your bright line.
I am laughing while you're talking. I'm laughing silently because I do the same thing when I'm dealing with my clients. Just if you could maybe help a little, since you're so good at doing this, but I actually understand at the same time, you want to break those codependent practices. Maybe this is not the time to break it if you want to move ahead, right? You have to value.
Exactly. Like break it next week, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have to engage in all kinds of long conversations together, but just doing this one thing, you just have to be smart and strategic. I do a lot of divorce strategy coaching for people all over the world, actually. And I'm certainly not a lawyer anywhere other than New York or Massachusetts, but there are certain human things that really apply everywhere, and this is one of them. You just hit a real hot topic. That's a great question, Judy.
And then I'll just finish with the other half of that, and that would be, everybody's working during the day. one spouse has a tendency to want to flood your text inbox or your email inbox with issues. Any advice in the patient's category for how we should communicate during the day?
So again, we can look at this as patience. I would look at this as respect, and I would look at this as creating a boundary. So you may not be able, you may in your agreement, right? You know, there shall be no more than one email per week, per day, per whatever, except for actionable emergencies. Let's say you don't have that in your agreement, because most people don't have that when they're first getting divorced. You might opt to create a separate email just for your ex so that you can control when you're seeing them. You're not at work and then, oh, there's an email and it comes to mind. Or you might choose to sign up for a co-parenting application, like the FAIR co-parenting application or Our Family Wizard or something like that, where the emails are visible to everyone and they're less likely to be full of outrageous things. Now, if you want to stick to just how do we deal with this in the patient's category, I would say that really, again, it's about making space for yourself to breathe and to not react. You see the email, you breathe through the email, maybe you reply if you need to, maybe you ignore it, maybe you write back, got it, thanks for the information, and move on. And that segues into peace. So I'll let you go.
Okay. And so, we will go to peace, but you said one thing that I thought was really important, an excellent piece of advice, and that is create a separate email address just for those emails about the divorce. Because I do wonder and kind of worry that when I'm even emailing my business emails to my clients, I know they're at work, whether it's at home or at an office, they're still working and they've got to do their jobs. I don't want to overwhelm them, and I'm kind of okay with them not dealing with this until they get home at night and I'll read it the next day. But I think you're right, a little organization about the way we put the divorce and the divorce communication in our normal day.
Yeah, I look at it as a container. I like that. So there's like the divorce, the pragmatics container, there's the emotion container, there's the co-parenting container, you know, and you can really get smaller and smaller, like those Russian Matryoshka dolls, right? Like there's all these containers. I'm sure I said that wrong. Anyway,
yeah, but you know, that's a good visual though. Okay, let's go to respect. It's a huge word, a huge concept. Goes a long way. What do you mean?
So when you're getting divorced, I think you talked about shame. Maybe you didn't talk about shame. I don't know.
Oh yeah, better part, giving permission to be
permission, right. Yeah. Right. So respect is all about either reacquainting yourself with, or maybe finding for the first time, your sense of self-respect. And so how do we start doing that? So no time like the present, right? Like you're getting divorced, you probably feel like crap, whether you're the Libor or the Levi, right? Like your life is upended, practically, emotionally. Even if you're like, oh, thank God, good riddance, goodbye, it makes most people feel pretty bad. So respect is about giving yourself permission to feel good about yourself, spend more time with people and places and circumstances that are serving you. Shelve those relationships that are making you feel bad. That doesn't mean you're never going to talk to your mother or your best friend again, but if they don't understand why you left him and you had to leave him, you know, pause, take a break. You know, it doesn't mean cut them off. It means keep the conversation brief, friendly, informative, and, you know, exit, and then come back when you're feeling better, they've had time to process your divorce, et cetera. And
I know, I love that. That was funny. They have time to process your divorce. Thank you for that.
It's hard for everybody.
No, it really is. Okay, so here's the hardest part of respect. I get the self-respect part. I really do. And I think people really do need to work on that. I agree with you. How do you engage in a level of respect for your soon-to-be ex-spouse if it was a tough relationship?
So here, I have a couple of things to say on that. One of the things my dad used to say, you don't need to respect me, Gabrielle. You need to act respectful.
Oh.
That's in the book too, I think. So basically, you start by being, you might even feel a little fake. It doesn't matter because you're going to build forward from there. You know, stop the nasty grams, stop the faces. I'm very good with bad faces, right? I don't speak nastily, but I can make a face that can like shush the room. So, you know, try to control your faces. Try to find something to say that's at least value neutral and recognize that people are where they are, right? I mean, I'm all about trying to find compassion. Tell yourself a story about why they are how they are, whether it be, you know, neurological, behavioral, learned. It doesn't really matter. You don't even need to be right, but it can help you. If you think like people are doing the best they can, and you might think, and the best they can do is total crap, it's still a way out. It's still a way for you to stop that insidious loop in your mind that's keeping you up and ruining your dates.
Yes, yes. I love that you said, you know, people do the best they can. This is a Maya Angelou concept, you know, the poet. People do the best they can at any given time, and sometimes their best is just not good at all. But it's all they can do.
That's right. So I didn't know Maya Angelou. You know that she said. Of course, I've heard of Maya Angelou, but that's right. And that can give you a lot of freedom in your life beyond your divorce.
That's right.
Right, with your friends, with your relatives, in your job, with your clients. I mean.
And with yourself.
And with yourself. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm very hard on myself. So things like that mean a lot to me. And I have to practice that myself. Okay, let's go to clarity. What do you mean by that?
So clarity is as I would say when I was growing up and my mom would say, funnest isn't a word. It's the funnest part. This is like clarity is the best. It's where stop the blaming. And you just get into your active visionary self. You start picturing, what do I want? What do I want to achieve? What do I want to be, get, do, right? Like, who do I want to, when I look back on my divorce in 5 years, who do I want to look back and see? When I look forward to my life in 5 years, how do I want it to look and be, right? There's a lot of things in our lives we can't control. And sometimes those things are devastating, whether it's an illness, a divorce, a child struggling with something. All we can do is control ourselves and keep ourselves with at least something that is exciting and happy and positive. Doesn't mean you have to go write a book. You know, I'm like a little OCD, always creating content and that sort of thing. But, you know, it might just be, I want to have really good friends over for dinner 3 days a week. Like for me, that sounds horrible to have to cook so much, but maybe you love cooking, right? And maybe you want to host these incredible dinner parties. Like focus on how you're going to get there. You know, maybe you don't care about X, Y, and Z, but you want to make sure you have enough money to buy them that beautiful house with a kitchen, the beautiful kitchen. I mean, whatever you want, tangible and intangible.
And, you know, just by saying that, I'll tell you what my reaction was. It all of a sudden popped the world open. When you can do that, you've pulled yourself out of your malaise, and we can, right, so easily get stuck in that and not even see that we're stuck. And you've created hope and openness, right? Is that your goal?
Exactly. And I love that imagery you have of popping yourself open. Like when I do this as a presentation, I have a picture with it, it's bright blue and it's like clarity, you know, endless possibilities and bright white. That is exactly what it is. You could show a champagne bottle. And again, turn to that journal and just start writing about how you want your life to be, whether it's a list or it's longhand or you're going back to go forward. Maybe you know, do a little exercise with yourself. Like, what did you love to play when you were 8, 9, 10, pre-adolescent, right? What parts of that can you maybe bring into your life now? What made you happy as a kid? There's elements of that that may bring some sort of satisfaction to you today. Because that's the part in our lives before we're influenced by all these external things. We're just, you know, doing our own thing. Like, I always had like a newspaper with my two friends in my class. I loved writing these newspapers and selling them to classmates. I mean, I had like all these crazy things. I also loved my dollhouse, and I had a jillion little dolls, and they all had these complicated relationships, and I was always like sorting out their relationships. So like the fact that I write and have this Better Apart blog and write books and have programs and that I do mediations, it just, I love what I do. I never feel like I'm working, and it really relates back to what I did. Now you might say, well, I played kickball all day long, but like if we were together, we'd go deeper. Like, what did that enliven you, and how can you bring that into your adult life? And that might sound like it's off topic for divorce, but the goal here is not about sticking in your divorce per se, although we do in the book address financial fundamentals, parenting, all the nuts and bolts. But in order to really get to the nuts and bolts in a positive way, you need to be firmly rooted and grounded in your life.
And now we go to peace. How do we achieve peace?
Okay, so first, when I'm talking about peace, what I'm really talking about is finding the space of equanimity where you're not feeling necessarily happy or sad, you're feeling neutral. And a great way to get there is by noticing the neutral, both in your life, in your kids' actions, in your ex's actions, and recognizing verbally when things are okay. Because if we're talking about internal peace, when we have, it's almost like a cycle, Judy. It's like when you have internal peace, you have external peace. When you have external peace, you have internal peace. It may be that you have to create external peace in order to feel internal peace, or vice versa. So it really depends on your situation.
You used a word at the beginning of this particular talk. You use the word mindfulness, and I've done interviews with people regarding mindfulness, and I think this fits in with your whole concept of peace, because mindfulness, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding of mindfulness is when you're in a chaotic state of mind, you literally can still control yourself and your emotions and move yourself away from that emotional chaos with practices that I think you really teach in your book.
I do, together with Elena. But I will say that the first step is noticing. Because when you notice how you feel in your body, that's when you have the power to stop and think and pay attention, and then you have the agency to choose how you want to behave. Because if you don't notice and you're just operating on automatic pilot, you're much more apt to create the spiral of conflict and to contribute to it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Oprah did an interview with a gentleman named Michael Singer years ago. And Michael Singer wrote a book called The Untethered Soul. Michael was does this sound familiar? He was CEO of a company, and then some charges were brought against him that he said were absolutely erroneous. And he had to continue working while he was dealing with this legal suit against him. And he was talking about the same thing you're talking about, is in the middle of all this emotional chaos, you can still stop and calm yourself down. And it allows you to move forward. It's almost the only way you can move forward.
And sometimes you need to really grieve. You know, like, I have a theory that that song Let It Go was so dang popular because people really related to it. it really tugged at the heartstrings. Let it go, let it go, let it go, let it go. I mean, if you're feeling sad, you know, and you can stand the Disney cheesy factor, go in the shower and play that song and sing it and cry your little heart out and do it until you can't do it anymore. And then you enter the next phase of the grieving process. And then you can notice more, because when you're just in it, it's so hard to see that you're in it.
True.
Or to see a way out of it, right? So, I mean, yeah. Let it go may not work for everybody, but like, so, just let yourself cry. Let yourself grieve. Feel your feelings, because if you push them down and smush them down, that's what they're talking about when they talk about toxic positivity. You can't really be positive if you're just like acting like everything's fine. You have to experience the pain while keeping a laser sharp focus on the long game.
Toxic positivity. I haven't heard that, but I like it. I wrote it down.
I didn't make it up, but it's a thing.
Yeah, no, I had not heard those two words put together, but I get it. I get how you force yourself to be positive because this is kind of what you are told you should do. But in so doing, you can actually avoid what you need to be doing, which is get in touch with your feelings, as you said.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Now, the fifth step, I think, might be one of the hardest of all, Gabrielle, and that's forgiveness. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. And so, you know, if I were rewriting Better Part Now, I think I would call it acceptance instead of forgiveness, because people are really charged by the word forgiveness. It doesn't actually bother me, and it didn't bother Elena, but it's really about recognizing that holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die, right? And knowing that you have the power to let go of your anger, it doesn't mean that you accept this person or you think this person is wonderful, or it doesn't take the betrayal away. It doesn't mean you need to retrust them again. It just means that you accept all that is and you move forward. I have a story. I had a very, very good friend who did something really not so nice to me a long time ago. And I was holding on to anger and I was upset. She's part of a big group of friends and I would see her, and it sort of like colored our experiences a bit. Mm-hmm. And one day I decided to forgive myself for holding on to the anger for so long and to forgive her for doing what she did. And for not knowing what she did or not caring or whatever it was. And it was very interesting because I saw her shortly after I made this conscious decision. And she was friendly like she hadn't been in 5 or 6 years. And she said, "Whatever happened between us, I can't even remember." And I thought, I don't know. Even though, of course, I knew, right? But it was like, it was gone. Like, my feelings around it were gone. And I know that might sound petty if you're going through a horrible divorce and, oh, what a terrible analogy, but I'm not giving you all the details or anything, but it's really like the point is that, again, we have tremendous agency over our lives, over our actions, over our relationships. We become who we think we are. We choose our path and our path unfolds. Obviously, you know, we don't have control over everything. Well, I shouldn't say obviously. Some people think we have control over everything in our lives. I don't think we have complete control over everything that happens. But I do think that we are complicit in our own undoing in different ways for each and every one of us. And when we recognize and own that, we can start changing it. Or if we don't change our behavior, acknowledging that we are part of the problem. And when we acknowledge that we're part of the problem, we can start to release the blame that we have.
Okay, so you.
When we replace the blame, we can start to accept situations better. That's all.
Okay, so you said two really important things, and I want to put them on top of what happens in a divorce. So this excellent example, this story that you just told, you got to a point where you just decided to forgive. And all of a sudden, you got a different reaction in your friend. So this tells me that the aura around you and your own physicality became easier, softer, more open, and she recognized it. And it was only an internal decision that you made, right?
Exactly. I didn't tell anybody. I would never tell you. It was so weird. I forgive you for not knowing. Like, I would never have spoken those words, right? But it was internal, but yet I think it translated.
It did. So now we're in divorce. So now we're in a mediation for divorce. We're going through the settlement. Some parts of the settlement are very difficult to deal with, and they bring up emotions from the marriage, from the relationship. I'm expecting, and I do expect this, and I have seen it, as you probably have too, that once there's a shift in one of the two people, there's a shift overall in the process. True or not true?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this thing about forgiveness that people can react to, what are you talking about? How could I possibly forgive him or her? Do you know what he or
she
is really?
You're forgiving them for you. You are forgiving them for you. And
yes.
Your children, maybe.
Yes. And then all of a sudden you get the benefit, because once you change that state, that emotional state, it translates, and there has to be a reaction out of the other soon to be ex-spouse, because we all react to shifts in energy, right?
Exactly.
And you can then start in a positive way controlling the positive emotion and energy going forward as you finish your settlement.
Exactly. Or as you start your settlement.
Or as you start your settlement, whatever. Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. So now we've gone through the five steps. Here is the other thing that I found very interesting that you wrote about. And again, because you're an attorney, I love where you're coming from. You said, now let's go from spiritual wisdom to legal wisdom. I love legal wisdom. Can we talk about this? How does that look?
Absolutely. So legal wisdom is just about making strategic choices on how you're going to actualize all those visions that you were picturing in your mind. How are you going to get there, right? So you're going to talk to your lawyer, and your lawyer is going to say, here's the range of outcomes. Your ex might talk to their lawyer, here's the range of outcomes. And then hopefully, if you have two semi-reasonable people, you're going to meet with a mediator, hopefully, if you can, and you're going to figure out how you're going to get to the outcome that you both want. You're going to find the space so that you can both get most of what you need and some of what you want. And you can only do that when you've done the whole Better Apart method to begin with.
Okay, so this is good.
Most of what you need and some of what you want. Because when you come to the table, you have interests and positions. Positions are what you want, and interests are the why, what you need. So you may need security. You may need an apology. You may need, you know, to feel less anxious. You may need money. But your position might be, I need the kids all the time. I need the house. But you don't really need the house. You need to know that you can afford another house in the same neighborhood. You don't really need the kids all the time. You need to know they're going to go to bed on time, get their homework done, etc.
Apology. You may need an apology. I am fascinated with people in a mediation. At times they will say, I just need an apology. I just need to know you care that you hurt me, or that you recognize I'm giving you what you're asking for, although I don't really want to. Let's talk about apology. Let's go with that.
So people need to be validated. We all need it. That's why people go to court. They want their day in court. Apologizing, you may not be heard. Like I said in the beginning, you need to have a lot of validation to hear a criticism. If you have been cheated on, you may feel deeply criticized on some level. You may need to hear 150 apologies. You may need cards. You may need to hear apologies for a long time. The person who did the quote unquote wrong, because obviously things are very gray. You know, it's not a good and a bad guy, right? The wrongdoer may need to apologize, and it goes far in the mediation to have it reflected. Did you hear her say she's sorry? She's not really sorry. Did you hear her say it? I just heard her say it. Say it again. I'm really sorry. Did you hear her say it? Do you want her to say it one more time? Could you say it one more time?
Now, this is exactly the way it works. You're so right. Yeah. Because, okay, so what happens, do you think, when the apology is given? Why isn't it, okay, received. All right. Well, if it's given with the incorrect tone of voice, all right, fine, I apologize. All right, so that's not a real apology.
It's not just that. It may be with the right tone of voice, but it just may be they need it again.
Oh, this is such tough stuff. This really is, isn't it?
It really is.
And it's never ending. And we could actually have the same conversation, you and I together on this podcast, mm-hmm. every single mm-hmm. week.
Absolutely. And there's so much more to it. There's so much. How does this go into your parenting plan? How does this work with your finances? How does this work after your divorce? I mean, we could talk and talk. This could be a whole...
Well, let's finish, because we do have a few more minutes left. Let's focus on the parenting plan, because that is one of the biggest parts of a divorce settlement, because it's about these precious human beings that you've both created.
Mm-hmm.
Can we give some examples of typical strife in a co-parenting plan, and how these things can be approached and resolved differently?
So just so many things that are coming to mind. Let's just say we have different ideas about bedtime or about when dinner is eaten. You know, maybe one parent is like, she has a sick stomach when she goes to school. You feed her too late every night. I'm not signing something where you have overnights during the week because she can't concentrate because she's got indigestion. I mean, you think I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding. This could be a real thing. So rather than maybe saying no overnight visits for the person who is feeding the kid late at night, who's from another country where they eat dinner late at night, you negotiate in your separation agreement. During weeknights, we'll have dinner. You want to by 5? I'm going to give her dinner by 6:30, not at 8 anymore. Right? There's always space for compromise. There are so many things to fight about. The main point I would like your listeners to take away is clarity is number one. So have clearly specified pickup and drop-off times. Safety is number one, but remember, just because you're the safety-oriented parent when the kids are little, maybe when the kids get older, there'll be a different circumstance, and your ex is going to be the safety, quote-unquote, more normative-oriented parent, right? Like, maybe you feel like your ex lets the kids watch too much TV, and it's terrible for the development. They're watching TV for 5 hours, or they give too much junk food, or they're not, you know, supervised closely enough, right? And it's not a black and white kind of thing. It's just different perspectives. Or you're married to a hunter and you don't feel safe with your 6-year-old hunting, even though your spouse has been in the woods hunting very safely since, you know, he was 9 or 10 or whatever, or I should say 6 or 5 with his parents. Maybe in 10 years, your little kid is a teenager. Well, now your ex thinks that the kid should be home by 9, and you think it's fine to have an 11:30 p.m. curfew, right? So now you're the more lenient one. Well, if you can learn to compromise when the kids are younger, the spirit of compromise is going to follow you when they're older. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The word compromise was...
Well, because I know I gave a sort of circuitous example, but basically what I was trying to say is sometimes compromising in the beginning is going to help you later on, because situations are very complicated. Life is long. Kids change. You and your ex are going to have different strengths and weaknesses most of the time. And if you can play to each other's strengths, even if you're lousy parents, maybe you'll be better apart and be better co-parents.
Oh my God, that was extremely well said. Let's start with just a second, the compromise piece to it. So you're at the beginning of your process for the divorce, and now you're engaging in mediation. And initially, it appears that everybody, they'll state what they want, and then they will continue to support why their what they want is really the right way. Okay, so maybe you're in the second or third mediation now, and that's probably where the compromise piece comes in, because unless you do, you're not going to get any farther. And then what I like to say to people, and you probably do the same thing, is if you aren't getting divorced, if you're living in the same house, you both still have different parenting styles. That's not going to change when there are two houses. So how can we make it the best it can be so our children aren't completely confused, and maybe we're teaching them the art of compromise? That was a great thing you just said.
Yeah.
So beware that there'll be this shift in mediation from, no, this is what I want because this is the right thing to do, mediation number one. Mediation number two, maybe you've moved a little bit away. By mediation number three, maybe this is where a real compromise should start being written down, something like that. Is there a body clock to this evolution compromise?
So I think it's really important when you mediate not to anchor to a position too early. You know, as a mediator, I really try to go into what each party thinks the other person wants from the beginning, because that helps with the validation process. Mm. You know, I don't know. It's really the anatomy of a mediation is an interesting thing. I usually start with the idea that the problem isn't really the problem, right? The problem that, you know, we both want the house. That's the problem. That's not the problem. The problem is, you know, how are you both going to feel secure with a place to live? Right? And we move forward from there. So once you start mixing it up a little, the idea of, you know, a mash is really what a divorce is, right? You got all the stuff, and then how are we going to untangle it so that it's served in a way that's much neater, and now you have two strings that you're just tying a pretty bow.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful example. That's wonderful. So, Gabrielle, do you have anything coming up in the near future for people going through divorce? Any seminar opportunities?
So, I'm actually going to be speaking at the Southern California Mediation Academy this weekend, and for the American Bar Association in a few weeks. But I think if you're going through a divorce, go over to GabrielleHartley.com and grab the Survive and Thrive bundle. You just put in your name and email address, and you'll get in your email a couple of things which will really get you on the right path forward. And then you'll get every week or so an article written by somebody who is wellness-oriented, mediation-oriented. There's great budgets, spreadsheets, and all kinds of resources right there at the Survive and Thrive bundle. So if you want to hear other podcasts, just you can Google my name and I come up with, you know, dozens and dozens of podcasts. But I think the best way to go is go to GabrielleHartley.com, put in for the Survive and Thrive bundle. And if you have any specific questions for me, please go ahead and message me. And I do my very best to reply to all messages within 24 hours.
You're really good on Instagram. You're fairly immediate. It's our best way of communicating. I think, which is great, which is fine. Okay, so Gabrielle Hartley, our honored guest today, talking about her book, Better Apart, which I absolutely loved from start to finish. You do coaching. That's what I wanted to end with.
Oh, yeah. So
people can literally call you and experience plain old coaching regardless of where they live.
That's exactly right. So there are two things beyond the Survive and Thrive bundle that you can get an inbox, a series of 13, I think it's about 13 videos, as well as printouts with exercises for you. If you go to GabrielleHartley.com and click, you know, coaching, and there's like, it's called like a 6-week series or something like that. And it's really nice. And that is curated and it's very affordable. And then, of course, if you're just starting a divorce and you don't know where to turn and you don't know what you need, I do strategic divorce coaching all over the country. And I'm available, again, just go to my website. That is the best way to contact me. And we can set something up.
Gabrielle, I would absolutely contact you if I were going through a divorce. I want to thank you. You're so positive, so up. It just feels good to have a conversation with you. So,
likewise. The pleasure is mine, Judy, as always.
So nice
to see you again.
Nice to see you again. And thank you all for spending time with us today. You can reach me, Judy, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com, or through my website, divorceresourceinc.com, divorceresourceinc.com. I only work in California, specifically with filing and mediation. Gabrielle works in Massachusetts and New York, and she's everywhere with coaching, everywhere.
So, and mediation.
And mediation,
oh,
of course.
Right.
Of course. Thank you again, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.